Thank you. And coming up next on Free Radio Santa Cruz, it's Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides, your favorite show. I have a special guest with me who will or will not sign in later, depending on her mood of the moment. I'm going to be with you from 6 to 8 now. Call-in numbers are 427-3772 and hopefully 469-3119. But the 427 number is the more definite one, so call in there if you want to be on the air. Stay tuned.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you. Sing me of wars and sing me of breadlines. Tell me of front page news. Sing me of strikes and last minute headlines. Dress your observation in syncopation. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing else that will do. It must get hot with what is what, or I won't love you. I want a song that's satirical, putting the mirror into miracle. It must be packed with social fact, or I won't love you. Sing me of kings and conferences martial. Tell me of mills and mines. Sing me of courts that aren't impartial. What's to be done with them? Tell me in rhythm. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing else that will do. It must be tense with common sense, or I won't love you.
And welcome to Bathrob Spears Broadsides. Again, call-in number here is 427-3772. And my guest in the studio this evening is Ivy Rue. Actually, that's her stage name, her nom de guerre, her, I don't know what it is, but that's what we're going to call you tonight, Ivy. Hello.
Hello, well said. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Now, I first ran into you, Ivy, on the streets when you were pushing matchbooks or matchboxes. That's actually what you do, right? You do a lot of things, I imagine, but that's what your latest enterprise?
That was one of my first times out at the Pacific Avenue selling matchboxes.
In fact, it was your first time, wasn't it?
It was.
And actually, I left my bag of tricks sitting next to you, and you so thoughtfully hefted it over to my post box area, and they gave it back to me. Thank you again.
You had some mail in there that gave away your address.
Yes, but you didn't reveal that to the authorities. You didn't take the bag to the police, revealing all the internal contents, which are actually just a bunch of tapes and records and, well, not vinyl, but discs and things. And I think I played the interview with you before on the air. But have you been back to Pacific Avenue? I guess you were back at least once more, because
I went a total of twice, two times. Yeah, it was both times were an experience, very much an experience downtown Santa Cruz.
Too much of an experience to avoid a third time, or
still in the works.
Uh huh. Are you making any money with these matchboxes? Anybody buying? Anybody biting?
No money to be made in matchboxes.
Any interesting interactions that you had that came up?
Interesting interactions. Yes, I did have a very interesting interaction with one woman, probably about my age. I'd say that she was either drug-induced or had some shards of mental illness that she was coping with, and she was very aggressive with me, and
she demanded all your matchbooks?
She demanded all the matchbooks.
And you whipped out a match and said, back off, woman.
No, I was very calm and patient with her, honestly. I wasn't sure which way the
wind blew.
The event was going to go. It could have gone very badly, and luckily it did not.
So you've actually spent about, what, 3 or 4 hours out there now? Or
yeah, we'd say 3 or 4 hours, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, you're sort of a newbie out there, and you're... You know, you seem like you haven't had a lot of experience out in public places doing that. I mean, that's just, I don't know you, of course, but, you know, it's...
It's a tough crowd out there.
Is it?
It is a tough crowd, yeah.
I mean, I go up and down, but I don't stay there. I just kind of come and go, so I don't sit on the... Generally, I mean, I have sat out there at a table at different points, but not recently so much. Though I may, as you may or may not know, we're... some of us are pushing to end the sleeping ban law in Santa Cruz, as well as the other anti-homeless ordinances. And last week we did a sleep out at City Hall at night, and we were attacked by the police. They were very courteous and professional as they took away our rights, but it was an attack. And a number of us got citations for being in an area after dark.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, it's me too. And so we're planning a series of other, at least there's, in the wind, there's rumor of other activity that's going to be happening. One tentatively planned for Saturday, day after tomorrow, is a sleepwalk or, I don't know, a scallywag march or a slumber party on wheels down to, or on the walk. Down Pacific Avenue, starting at the post office at 10 o'clock in the morning, and then going to the wharf area. The idea being to make the tourists aware of the bad laws in Santa Cruz that the police are enforcing and the city council has passed, and the community is sort of ignoring or doesn't know about. To educate the people, both in the community and people who are coming to the community, how they treat people who are outside, who have no place to go, or who are very poor, and choose to try to avoid paying excessive rents by, you know, living in their vehicles or struggling to find a place somewhere else that's often illegal. In fact, almost invariably illegal. Santa Cruz, you know, keeps a nice housing racket going by making living outside illegal. Some would say that's for the public safety. I would say that's for private profiteering and to benefit those who got in early, whose grandparents got property here, or who actually there's a lot of people who actually had property here, or their grandparents were here, and they have to leave because they can't afford the rents. Now you lived here for what? You were telling me 7 years.
7 years. Yeah, I moved here in 2009.
And the reason that you decided to come into the studio, I think, or at least the thing that interested me when we talked earlier on the phone, was your rental situation and that of your co-tenants, your colleagues.
Yeah, recently we were faced with a crisis of housing. The building that we've been occupying for 6 years was recently sold, and we no longer have the same manager that we used to work with. It's now being managed. The property is being managed by Bailey Property Management, and there's three other units in the building, and we were all served a notice of a change of terms of lease agreement, which resulted in a minimum of a $600 a month adjustment to all of our leases.
That's such a nice word. They raised your rent $600.
They did.
From a previous rent of?
I was paying $1,400.
What did you get for your $1,400 there?
I got a great apartment. Windows and lots of light and breeze. It's in the Seabright neighborhood off of Galt Street, and we've really been enjoying living there. We had a very positive relationship with the owner, and when I moved in, he said, I will probably never raise your rent. And he meant it. He never did raise the rent. I think he was from the old school of thought that you don't raise the rent and you keep your tenants happy, then they'll become long-term tenants and the turnover, and then they won't have to deal with the turnover, which also is a huge issue in Santa Cruz.
Did the owners tell you why they had sold the property? Did you ever talk to them?
Yes, I did. The brother was managing the property for the sister, and she apparently had inherited the property along the line. And I think as she was getting older, she decided to sell the property.
Got a good chunk of change for it, I imagine.
Mm-hmm. I think it sold for $1.3
million. Wow.
According to, yeah.
Well, just, you know, pool your pennies and buy the property. Then you'll be all set.
Pool the pennies.
You can profiteer off other people.
Pool the pennies.
Live in a doghouse in the back or something. Yeah, so you have what? You have until September to either vacate, organize all the tenants on your block, I don't know, kidnap the Bailey Company and take over the whole thing with some sort of hostile takeover. You've got to make a decision by September as to what you're going to do.
I guess so. I think we've all agreed that we're not signing the new lease agreement. And because everybody in the building has different needs, we're all trying to approach it from different angles and make some kind of contact with the new owners. Some of us want to stay longer than September without the rent increase. Some are agreeable to a 10% increase in their rent. I'm not agreeable to any increase. I'd like a lifetime agreement at the rent I'm paying now. And so we all have different sets of needs.
You're going to be ending up selling matchbooks on the street, the way this is beginning to look.
Yes, a little match
or maybe
girl.
Apples, like in the old days. Yeah, it's easy for me to say and make jokes about it, but it's true that a lot of people, in fact, one of the reasons we're doing this 10 a.m. gathering at the post office this weekend, day after tomorrow, is to dramatize. It's not really, I mean, we're not focusing at all on tenants, but tenants are also, you know, it's a real issue for tenants, too, because one of the uses of the laws against the homeless is to frighten tenants into agreeing to unreasonable terms or moving out and allowing the wealthier to move in. I mean, that's at least one of the impacts. I don't know if that's actually the motivation. You might say, no, it's to stop, dirty and unsanitary camping. But in fact, of course, it has to do really with the notion of this sort of nasty phrase that's used to cover a variety of ills, a variety of evils, which is quality of life. Your being there, if you're poor, is sort of a blight, you know. I mean, it doesn't encourage the gated community folks to be comfortable as they move, you know, in a more sort of smooth and less troubled environment without having to see the grubbier side of things.
Well, it's a big issue for everybody, and not just here in Santa Cruz. San Francisco has a terrible homeless problem. Los Angeles.
I would say we have a terrible landlord problem. I wouldn't call it a terrible homeless problem. The problem has to do with the fact that landlords and then large, wealthy, corporate income people have essentially sequestered a significant amount of power and wealth and are intent on not just maintaining it, but increasing it. And that results in they're wanting to either maintain the existing system or stiffen it up even more so that people like yourself will be, forced to move on to Fresno or Tijuana or, I don't know, some other place, or maybe into your car where, you know, you'll be able to, you'll find a way. And if not, there are services for people. And if there aren't, well, someday there will be. And if there's always, and meanwhile, let's turn on to the next channel and see what else is happening on TV. That's, unfortunately, I think, you know, what I find. And
well, I have a hard time believing that that people such as the Baileys who bought our property, that they want to see us homeless or displaced or living in our car. I have a hard time believing that people who are affluent want to oppress people with lesser means.
Want to, I just don't think they give a shit. In other words, I think their primary focus is on their property, their wealth, their next tenant, their next indebtedness. I mean, they're, you know, they have to pay for their second house. They got to pay for their, you know, daughter's education in a relatively well-to-do school as tuition goes up. And people are inconvenienced by students blocking freeways and objecting to these tuition hikes. In other words, it's not a question of an intentional desire to dump you out. It's you are just collateral damage. See? But again, that, I mean, I don't know the Bailey Company. They could be the sweetest philanthropists in the world. And when you come to them, because you've already written them, you've already tried to contact them, and I doubt they've responded. What's been their response?
Well, I'm still waiting for a response.
How long have you been waiting?
It's been 3 days now.
Oh,
I'd like to
be.
Give them, you know, a significant amount of time. I wrote them a very well-composed letter welcoming them to, you know, our community at 102 South Morrissey, and congratulations on the acquisition.
They've been here probably longer than you have. So.
Well, I think they're actually from Los Angeles, and I don't want people to listen to get confused. Bailey Property Management is managing the building now. However, there's a couple named the Baileys who own the property now, and they're not, as far as I know, there's no relation between the two. So just kind of this ironic twist that the owners of the building happen to be Baileys, and the people managing the building now is also named Bailey. And so, I think these Baileys that own the building are actually a residence of Los Angeles.
Now, the Baileys who own the building are just a family, or they're a corporation?
A family, as far as I know.
No? So you're hoping that they'll be as, if not as generous, perhaps at least half as generous as the people that you were previously renting from?
I'm hoping that they can soften them up. With, you know, with these letters.
Coffee cake, perhaps. Tea in the morning.
Tea and crumpets.
Tea and crumpets.
Yeah.
Well, I'd be curious to hear how this works out. As you know, maybe I'll see you as you sell. I don't know if you're going to be selling many matchbooks on the street. You should say that we're not talking about, you know, like the. Whenever I talk about the matchbooks, I think about somebody at a, you know, a scantily clad. Woman at a theater running around selling, you know, matches to cigarettes.
It's a tragic myth, the little match girl.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's not a happy tale. But the idea behind my matchboxes was to actually carry an element in your pocket, which is fire, and then to put on top of the matchboxes images that somehow had collective meaning for all of us. And, you know, to carry these matchboxes around as sort of a power piece and maybe connect us to something more archetypal in our past as humans. For instance, one of the images on the matchbox is the Venus of Willendorf, which is a 30,000-year-old handheld sculpture of a very bulbous woman. And in art historian circles, it's a very well-known and popular image of you know, perhaps the first female archetype that we have art historically.
Back in matriarchal days, perhaps?
Perhaps. So that was the idea behind the matchboxes, to carry around these archetypal images infused with the idea of also carrying fire in your pocket.
Well, I hope you can light a fire under the ass of these landlords, frankly.
Me too.
It's really hard for me to have sympathy for landlords. My landlord is a very nice guy. And more than that, he's a really unusual person. But most landlords, I haven't really had a lot of experience with. I usually don't rent from people that I don't know. You know, I try to, you know, and that, but most people, a lot of folks don't have that kind of luxury to do that. And, you know, I think one of the reasons you're going to be faced with evictions in September or, you know, huge rent hikes. And that's the time when the students are coming back and it's most difficult to get housing, or at least one of the times. So it's, but I mean, it's going to be hard at any point. I've had people on the show, and I mentioned to you Cynthia Berger, who's with Tenants Together, or Tenants United, I can never remember, who was struggling with organizing tenants and finding it a very difficult job. And you yourself have tried to contact the attorney who was on the show some months back. Unfortunately, he's not a pro bono attorney. You know, he's going to take your money. I just very little patience with professions, doctors, attorneys, who seem to be making a lot of money off people for no good reason, really, other than the fact that they are stuck in a very archaic and disproportionately oppressive system, and it's what it is. And, you know, it may be true that all individuals don't want to oppress you, particularly. They couldn't care less. I mean, they don't even know you. Why should they oppress you? Well, you know. But if that's what, you know, if it's okayed by the system they're under, the profit system, then down you go. You know, that's the brakes. Move on. You know, let's get going. You know, don't linger here. The police officers, sheriff's at the door with the eviction notice. So, what's happening out there in Radio Land? And we often get very few calls. Sometimes we get some. For many tenants out there, are you facing similar problems with unreasonable evictions? You don't have to say who you are. You know, we know that it may not be the most healthy thing to do if you're afraid that there are 50 other people ready to swoop in and grab the room that you're in, as seems to be often the case. There's a letter online. If you go to Santa Cruz Indie Media, which is a website I go to myself a lot, perhaps just out of sheer habit, but also because I write stuff and I post it there, which kind of may strike a sympathetic bell with you, Ivy. It's called "Okay, Santa Cruz County Landlords, You Win." And here's a letter to the Santa Cruz County landlords. And I don't know if you ever go to Santa Cruz Indie Media yourself?
Not recently, no.
Okay. Not recently or not
recently.
At all?
Not recently.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You've been there before?
I have.
Cool. After a grueling 4-month search for a suitable home for our family, we give up. Santa Cruz County landlords, you win. We've been to open houses before everyone else even arrives, completed application packet in hand, only to be turned down. We've been first to immediately respond to your CL ad, only to be ignored. We've dealt with unpleasant property management companies who were all too happy to take our app fees, but then not even bother processing our app. In fact, one didn't even have the courtesy to let us know what had happened with our app. Repeated voicemails and emails went ignored. We later found out, though she was happy to take our $60, she never even processed our app. We were the first to apply. The place went to someone else. We don't smoke. We don't have pets. We have a pile of character reference letters. We have the income, and when $3,200 per month can't get you a decent home somewhere in this area, I find that pretty sad. It's not just sad for us, though. It's sad for the community. My husband grew up here. We owned a home here. We own a business here. And though when the economy crashed, we eventually lost almost everything, we managed to hang on to our business. We're still here. We're building back. We contribute greatly to the local economy. We are decent and kind and good people who have been treated very badly during the process of just trying to find a nice home to raise our family in. The rents are outrageous, and the behavior I've witnessed from my fellow man has been pathetic. To see my children become so excited over a place only to be disappointed repeatedly is probably the worst of all. I know this is happening to many other families out there. I just felt it was high time someone said, "Shame on you." And it's signed, "Disgusted in Santa Cruz County."
Bless their hearts.
Any thoughts
I feel
about
that? Yeah, I feel that letter a lot. My neighbor is a single woman in her 50s, and she just lost her lifetime partner about 6 months ago. So she's dealing with her own grief and loss issues, and then on top, she's got this increase of rent. And she said she went to see a place downtown. I think it was last night we were talking, and there were 40 applicants for the same unit. So it's a tight squeeze out there, and there's potential 6 families living in our units now that are faced with this very same issue of, you know, having to deal with tenants or landlords having to deal with new landlords, having to come up with money for fees, for background checks and credit checks, and vying for an apartment when there's 50 other applicants, 40 other applicants for the same place. And what do we do in the meantime? How do we come up with money for a hotel? How much stress are we going to feel collectively as a family if we have to live in our car for any extended length of time? It really puts us under quite a lot of stressors. And I feel the contents of that letter.
How big is your family?
I have two adult children. They just turned 18 and 21.
And they're also working?
Yes, they are working.
And so you put in the $1,400 you currently pay per month. And I guess you were telling me you might be able to scrape together $2,000 for the next month, but you couldn't do it for every month that followed.
Right, that's correct. Maybe once we could come up with the $600, but as a long-term initiative, we're already working five jobs between the three of us. So I think really asking us to get another job is physically very
demanding.
You're
obviously lazy welfare cheats. That's what your problem is. Well, actually, it's time for a musical break. It's also time for anybody interested out there to call in, 427-3772. City Council, however, is on vacation, so they won't be helping you at this time. But the Board of Supervisors is still around. Maybe you could sleep in the Board of Supervisors chambers, or feel free to join us at 10 o'clock on the stroll through Pacific Avenue, expressing concern for the people who are already outside, and those who are coming outside, and those who are in vehicles. And it's illegal, as you probably know, to sleep in your vehicle in Santa Cruz. And increasingly, people are harassed. Yesterday, I went down to the city hall to look again at more of the Parks and Rec tickets with Tough Love Tucker with me. She's a recent returnee to Huff. She was actually part of the Homeless Issues Task Force, the secretary, or actually, now she was the unpaid or very cheaply paid person. Don Lane, our current mayor, finagled his way into a position that a homeless person should have had on the Homeless Issues Task Force back in 15 years ago, when they actually had a real Homeless Issues Task Force the city council created, mostly to evade activist demands that they were making, similar to the ones that are being made now, if not identical. So let's take a musical break, and then we'll come back. 427-3772 is the call-in number, so you can call in at 427-3772 if you want.
She left the city shy of 17. She said she had to learn to feel. 'Cause mama never taught the difference between right and wrong. She said, I'm gonna find out what is real. So cross your fingers, knock on wood, but shine.
Your face in your own eyes.
Phoenix, who comes to town every so often with her harp, and I run into her on the streets, and I don't know what that song is called. I don't think I actually have a... She has a... If you like the kind of music, she's at phoenixpepperwood@gmail.com if you want to reach her. This was recorded in Taos, New Mexico about a year and a half ago. It's called Couch Surfing. And I like the sound of it. I can't understand the words, but the sound is real nice. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. I'm in the studio with Ivy Rowe, sorry. Why did I write Rowe down? You're not near no fish. And we're going to be going back now to kind of cover some stuff in the last couple of weeks that's been happening. Ivy's also maybe going to talk to us at some point about the her experiences in San Francisco shelters up there, where she was, dodging the police for 3 years?
I raised my kids in the shelters, in the shelter system up there.
Really?
Yeah.
And how old were your kids?
6 and 9 at the time that we entered the Hamilton Family Emergency Shelter.
And how did you have a long time tenancy there? Did you have to keep going back, signing up?
It was 3.5 years of shelter living, different venues.
So you didn't have to keep going back to sign up again. You were given some tenancy, or
The Hamilton Family was a 60-day shelter. You had 60 days at a time, and then after the 60 days, it was the lottery system where you called in for beds after that.
And were there times you didn't get beds after the 60 days, or were you generally...
There were times we didn't get beds after 60 days.
And then you were on the streets of San Francisco.
We were. That's correct.
Using food not bombs, perhaps?
No, using credit cards to stay in a hotel.
Oh, wow. So you had a little resource to fall back on.
We did. We were lucky.
And this was during what period of time? What years was it?
This was around 2002, I'd say. 2001, 2002.
Interesting. Well, let me jump now to last Saturday, when we assembled bunches of us at the post office to begin a walk to a camping area. We chose, eventually we chose the City Hall grounds. It's the center of the city government. You would think it's a place you go to petition the government for a redress of grievances, as the First Amendment words it. I think it's both the state and the federal constitutions. And here's a couple of interviews that happened. One. Jim Waller, I believe, gave us this interview, and let's hear what he had to say.
Jim Waller. And Jim, you've been indeed, yes.
At least every source of course, the record that May that I looked at did. So we'll keep an eye on what's going on. But you're not going to be sleeping with us. Is that because you have somebody else more, should we say, desirable to sleep with?
No, it's just that I don't have camping gear and...
Is it? technical problems, as you can hear. My apologies, folks. I don't know if we have a connection problem or what. We had a problem with this last time. I'm going to do what I did last show, which I kind of... it was a pain in the butt, but it involves sort of the manual playing of the tape here or the audio. And let's see if that works. And we'll try again.
With Jim Weller.
And Jim, you've been a voice at City Council for the rights of poor people. Against stay-away orders in parks, for example. I remember seeing you at a council 6 months ago, futilely trying to stop that law. Now almost every ticket gets a stay-away order that I've
read. That's what I read, yes.
Every Parks and Rec ticket in May that I looked at did. And you're coming in from Capitola to keep an eye on what's going on, but you're not going to be sleeping with us. Is that because you have somebody else more, should we say, desirable to sleep with?
No, it's just that I don't have camping gear, and I need to be up and out early to rehearse for choir at church in the morning. So it just doesn't really fit with what I'm doing.
Well, you know, we are planning to get up early and troop back here and have a nice oatmeal breakfast or some such thing.
That sounds nice.
It is indeed. You can always come down and regale us with some singing in the morning.
Well, I came down this afternoon to pay my respects.
Yes, you are indeed here. Anything that happened in the last couple of weeks that you think is of note?
Well, we're all terribly concerned about the loss of services at the Homeless Services Center.
Or the Homeless Lack of Services Center, as I call it.
As you call it, yes. Remains to be seen whether anything can be done to fix that situation, to help them raise enough money to restore the Paul Lee Loft and services after the end of the year.
Well, as I understand it, they don't want to restore the services to the broader community that they've been providing, like meals, showers, laundry, just to denizens of the Paul Lee Loft and the other programs. So you're going to have to be in a program to be able to eat of their food, is my new understanding. It's not a matter of money. It's a policy change. Although they have, I mean, it's always seemed peculiar to me that their $3.4 million budget, even when it loses $600,000 or $300,000, can't afford to pay for the most basic and the most widespread service, the food service, or the shower service, the laundry service, not just for the people that they use as their, you know, cream in order to get federal grants, but, you know, the people that come in, use it, and leave.
Yeah, it's not good, and I don't know why it is that way.
Well, I expect you to find out and get back to us, Jim.
I'll do my best.
All right, we'll be waiting.
Thank you.
We've been talking with
Jim Weller.
Thank you, Jim. For 4 days, but he's noticed a certain attitude by deputies and police officers when he's been stopped in his vehicle, which is also your home at the moment.
Sure. I just kind of a complex issue where, you know, the attitude. I can't speak to the attitude of any individual officer, because when approached in the morning, and people come and knock on my door in the morning, and they say, "What are you doing?" And I say, "Well, I'm sleeping." And I say, "Well, you can't do that. Well, you can't do that. It's against the law. I'm good for camping, whatever." in my mindset, is a little bit more that the camping is a biological imperative, that if you're human, you have to sleep. Every human has to sleep. It's odd that they leave and then walk away. They don't press charges. They don't give me tickets. And it seems to me that I'm not necessarily the target of the law. It seems to me like it seems to be a law that's really outlawing poverty. It's really outlawing it. It's making it illegal for a person to choose to not participate in the housing market. Or more than likely, it's making it illegal for a person to not be able to participate in the housing market. Which that's outlawing poverty. And then it perpetuates the problem, because if you ticket someone for being poor, well, then they get a fine. They can't pay the fine because they're poor, so then they get a warrant out for their arrest, and then so they go to jail for being poor, so they can't work because they were in jail. And then, you know, in San Francisco, they've done studies where 10% of the time, because of that process, people who weren't homeless before end up homeless because the law is making the problem worse.
I couldn't agree with you more. And, you know, it's interesting, you know, you've noticed this within, well, you've noticed it elsewhere, I'm sure. But,
yeah,
you have a very, you know, I see you're from Oregon originally, or?
My vehicle's from Oregon. I think the mic's on that side. The vehicle's from Oregon. I'm from Seattle originally. I grew up in Seattle. I went to school in Malibu in Southern California. So I kind of ended up here because it's in between my two homes. But the vehicle's from Oregon, and I travel because of, you know, I have friends and family up all up down the coast. I travel to Seattle, Portland, San Francisco, Santa Cruz, and Los Angeles pretty frequently. And I've never been approached. I have not. I've only been doing it for a few months, but I've never been approached with the amount, to the degree, with the aggressiveness that I have in here.
In Santa Cruz.
In Santa Cruz.
How many times have you been approached?
Twice, and they were both in Santa Cruz. No. I approached once, ticketed at the other time. So one approach, one ticket. Within 4 days.
Police officers or deputies?
The BW was a sheriff in the county, in Anacobre, County. And then in the city, I just got a ticket when I paid, so I assume they just looked at the thing and thought I wasn't paying.
And what was the ticket for?
I was just city parking, like one of the city lots. It's $43 for parking tickets. Yeah. Which isn't a big deal, but I paid. And the other was the sheriff.
And you're likely to, perhaps, if not sleep out tonight with us, keep an eye on what we're doing?
I think I'll probably sleep out and I'll join. I mean, that's kind of the nice thing, is with the vehicle I have, I can kind of sleep wherever. I'm interested to see what happens, because I can see there are a lot of people from many different backgrounds and many different reasons that a person might want to sleep outside.
Or have to sleep outside,
yeah. Like, why should a person bother for sleeping?
Why indeed? And I'd ask you your name, but I think you asked to remain anonymous, and so thank you for the interview.
Yeah. On a note of... There's one thing I was talking to a friend about yesterday. I don't know if this is useful to you, but I just thought of there's a saying, like, we always say, let sleeping dogs lie, right? That's like wisdom that, like, our parents or grandparents would give to us. And they're like, why can't we just treat people with the same dignity that we treat dogs?
Well, dogs are more valuable than homeless people, you know.
I don't know that. Everyone has value.
Homeless lives matter.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
And with me are other members of the working committee to help plan, with your Sunday evening present coming as well.
This is Rabbi Phil Posner, who also got ticketed along with six or seven of the rest of us later that night, sleeping at City Hall.
Israel, Lauren, and Abby.
All right.
As one of the major people with Abby, particularly because Abby and I and Thick Steve first came up with this idea, I personally am grateful for the wonderful committee that we've enjoyed doing this. The purpose of the event, we are here to participate in a peaceful, nonviolent demonstration in Tampa, showing our opposition to the present Santa Cruz ordinance that prohibits sleeping in parks and other public places. So that's the purpose. We're asked fairly often, what's the purpose of this? Showing our opposition to the present Santa Cruz ordinance that prohibits sleeping in parks and other public places, particularly at night. In that context, we are appealing to the city council that they either designate a few acres of space out of the 116 acres of present park space or find some other suitable place in which homeless individuals may legally sleep. So there's 116 acres. Now you tell me if this city cannot afford to give homeless people at least 2 acres for people to sleep.
Yeah, right.
I also like to remind people that amongst the parks that we have, there are 2 parks that are designated for dogs and their masters. No parks for homeless people. We hope that our constitutional right to protest an unjust ordinance will be met with understanding by the police should they appear at our sleep-in. However, as this demonstration may lead to participants receiving a citation by the police or possible arrest, it is important that you know of that possibility. As in the Seattle threat action of 2011, would those here assembled like to choose one of the following pledges? Now, I will read the 2 pledges. Raise your hand with those of us on the working committee of this demonstration pledging, I will participate in a peaceful civil disobedient action on behalf of the homeless in Santa Cruz, including the right to sleep, and understand the risks. That's one. The second, or raise your hand with those of us on the working committee of this community campout who pledge, I am uncomfortable with such a risk, meaning citation or getting in prison, but I'm here because I support the sleep-in and support those who are able to risk arrest. So now, first, I'm one of them. Raise your hand with those of us on the working committee of this demonstration pledging, I will participate in a peaceful civil disobedient action on behalf of the homeless in Santa Cruz, including the right to sleep and understand the risk. Say yay.
Yay!
Or raise your hand of those of us on the working committee of this community campout who pledge, I am uncomfortable with taking such a risk, but I'm here because I support the sleep-in and support those who are able to risk arrest. Say yay.
Yay!
Our working committee believes that you who are here to participate should help us choose the location for tonight's sleep-in.
Yes.
By the way, the police did ask us where we were going to go, and we told them it was up to the community. So, however, at our last working committee meeting, we voted some of the following possibilities. First night, City Hall. San Lorenzo Beachlands, Midtown Club, Mission Park, Post Office, City Hall. I said that. And here at the Post Office. So, we want you to help us decide where you would like to go from here.
Do it again.
Just so we're clear, I think we've really kind of narrowed it down to 3 or 4. Just so we're clear, we've narrowed it down to
Steve Plaich.
5 good options. Those would be City Hall and those grounds over there. Those would be the San Lorenzo Park Benchlands, which is the end of it near the bridge, which is a nice area where occupied San Lorenzo Park was during the
occupied Santa Cruz.
Also, Depot Park, which is a ways away. Also, Laurel Street Park, which is across the way, as you know, which I'm not sure what the situation is over there. There's also the town clock, which is probably not very comfortable for sleeping, but it is an option, and here at the post office. So those are really the main
options. Just one
options.
More place.
Yes?
There's one place, Kevin. It's on Bay Avenue, the stretch on Bay from California to the nice piece of grass, which all
Okay, so are we ready to vote?
If anyone has another place that they think is really important.
Yeah, wait. Is City Hall and the police station one building?
That would have a right to break into.
No. Because I mean, I
Harvey
think
West?
We should be next
you
to
have
the
Harvey West on there?
Okay, so I think that I know Steve and I and a few others favor City Hall. So can we start with City Hall, but we'll vote with all the others.
Is
all
City
in favor
Hall,
of
right?
City Hall.
Yeah.
City Hall.
City Hall.
Yeah, count the vote.
Count the vote.
Aye.
Donnelly. Give them up. Do you want to count the vote?
Roberts County.
Give them up.
One note about City Hall is the City Council was there.
One vote.
Three notes. Thank you.
16, 17, 18. I count 18, but some other hands might have gone up. Maybe 19.
Okay, San Lorenzo. The bridge land.
Oh, it's okay. Where did
it go? Okay. Right underneath the bridge.
San Lorenzo right across
up here. There's one or two over there.
Oh, behind the court. Yes. That's really nice. I don't see
City Hall, so that's where we're going. Now, here we have some particular things we just want to talk to you about.
And that was the scene on Saturday night around 7 o'clock when we assembled at the post office, gosh, only 4 or 5 days ago, and then decided to parade off to City Hall right down Pacific Avenue, which we did, although we had a detour, and I played some of the audio from that detour last show. We had a porta potty with us because the city closes all its bathrooms at night in an attempt to make sure that the city remains sanitary and clean by assuring that people find their own places to go poo-poo and pee-pee. Of course, this tends to create an unusual odor in some places, and it also gives right-wing bigots an opportunity to start ranting about the homeless menace and how the horses are being frightened and the children are being scared, and it's all very unsanitary. So it actually serves a number of functions. It helps to assist the police department in getting a bigger budget to deal with homeless crime, because it is a crime to urinate and defecate outside of a bathroom, even if the bathrooms are closed. And it is a crime to fall asleep outside of a building, actually outside of a residence. It's actually a crime in Santa Cruz to fall asleep inside most buildings. You can't do it inside an office. You can't do it inside a theater after 11 o'clock at night, mind you. You can't do it inside any building that is not intended for human occupancy, which means intended for residence. So the sleeping ban in Santa Cruz is quite thorough, although the police department, it wouldn't have any time to do anything else if they started going after everybody who was violating it, because more than 2,000 people in the city probably violate it each night. And that is something the police department generally ignores unless it's brought to their attention either by officials who want to stop protests, neighbors who want to run off people sleeping in their vehicles nearby, or cops training rookies on how to deal with problems so they can take them around and show them how to, just to practice, give a few tickets to the homeless folks. And it's kind of a cruel system. And it's a cruel system which doesn't even acknowledge its own cruelty. And that is really, that's a sort of traditional. I mean, I think people who were hanging pickpockets in England 300 or 400 years ago didn't think it was cruel. They thought it was only just. You don't allow people to steal from other people. If they don't want to get hung, they don't steal. And if they're children, that's even worse, because then they'll grow up to be thieves. I don't know what the rationale was at that and that in those days. We still have similar mindsets in the 21st century. So in any case, I'm going to play some more tape after taking a brief musical break and hearing your flood of phone calls, 427-3772, and, of course, some incisive commentary from Ivy Rue, who has been listening intently every moment to this and has probably come up with all kinds of observations. I'm going to give her a chance to kind of pull those together, and we'll see how she does on the quiz. You, too, can be a part of this, 427-3772. Thank you.
down so fucking long, it looks like up to me. That's a song by Skidmark Bob, former Free Radio Santa Cruz broadcaster. You can still find his show on Free Radio. It's, as I stare at the schedule, that was on Tuesdays or Mondays. And maybe not, maybe not. It's anyway, he was a great street singer. He was arrested repeatedly for terrorist threats because the police called that song a terrorist threat. Or he had another song called Shoplifting at the Bookshop Santa Cruz. And he and Phil Free were always pushing the envelope as good singers and good activists do, and actually is trying to restore basic rights to people who, like our guest, Ivy Rue, are being dispossessed. Even they're forking out a significant chunk of their income, which brings me to a question that a timid caller, come on, caller, come out from behind the shadows. We, you know, you can do it. But he wanted me to ask you this question, and I'm going to, which I guess I've already put to you, which is, what are you doing to improve your income potential? You know, what stocks and bonds have you invested in? What new skills have you gotten? Why should we pay any attention to you? Why aren't you just a loser that we should just forget about?
Well, and I'm sorry that my mic was off. I hope everybody heard that. I'll say it again. The question is, what have you done to increase your potential, your income potential? As though that's the reason that you're having this problem.
Well, I'm sorry that I didn't get a chance to talk to the caller. I'm a little bit confused about the question, and the question's a little bit intimidating to me. And I think that question also begs another question. However,
Feel free to tell me what question you think it begs.
Well, the question would be, what does the economy do to help lift the individual? The individual is responsible to a certain extent, but we live within all of these institutions that are also supposed to help the individual help themselves.
Now, wait a minute. Not if you're a laissez-faire economist. You pull yourself up by your own bootstraps, Ivy. You want the government to help you? This isn't Stalinist Russia. What are you, some kind of socialist Swedish... I run out of words.
Well, I think that I have always had the intention to try to be of service to other people and to help other people in my community. I took three years of my life just in the last 5 years. I went back to school to the University of Kansas, and I obtained 2 undergraduate degrees, one in the humanities and one in art history, and my thinking was that...
Now, hold it. You could have gotten a business degree. You could have gotten... You could have become a welder, and now you... What, are you going to teach humanities? What teaching opportunities are... Are they rife? I don't know where there are that many teaching opportunities. Now, you came out to California, the most expensive place to live. Should we have any sympathy for you?
Well, now I'm just completely humiliated.
Exactly. That's what the caller... I don't know if the caller intended that. He wanted to ask you a hard question. But, you know, I guess the point of the question is...
Of course I always want to make improvements in my life and for the lives of my children and for the lives of people around me. I feel like I've, you know, used the institutions that society has to offer to better myself. I don't think being a single woman with children, you know, has helped me in that area, but it was clearly a choice that I made to raise my children alone. If society has punished me for that, that's, you know, whatever that's worth. But as far as what have I done to step up my game, I'm a lifetime learner. I enjoy learning things. I have a lot of skills. I have 2 undergraduate degrees plus $43,000 of debt from those diplomas.
Have you been able to get any work through any of those diplomas? Have they assisted you in any way?
Not really. You know, the wages that Santa Cruz employers are able to pay employees don't meet the fair market rate of people who set real estate prices.
Why don't you move to Fresno or New Mexico? Or these are the questions that you will always hear from the folks who are, you know, denouncing homeless people. You're not homeless. You're still indoors at the moment, but that may become your situation soon. And they're going to say to you, well, why don't you go to a place where you can afford to live?
Well, I think that's a good, that's an appropriate question to ask me.
And so what would be your
answer? there are a lot of good reasons to leave Santa Cruz.
Are you considering that?
Yes. And my family happens to be fortunate enough to own a parcel of just land in New Mexico. And I paid $2,500 for the parcel 2 years ago with my last earned income credit tax refund.
To get you 1 inch of property in Santa Cruz.
And it's definitely the stopgap in our lives at this time that will prevent us from being displaced and homeless.
Okay, well, if our timid caller wants to come out from behind the velvet curtain and actually ask a follow-up question, I would encourage him to do so. I know this caller. He's a good activist, or has been in the past. He and his colleagues have faced a relocation and displacement from the De Anza trailer park. That's not the right word for it. Mobile home park is the way they like to describe it, where rent control was destroyed about 15 years ago by the progressive city council in Santa Cruz, shortly thereafter they destroyed rent control at Clearview Court. And they essentially sent the equity value of all the trailers down to zilch, because while they gave people stable rents while they were in the trailers, that they couldn't get rid of them, they couldn't sell them, because at that point rents could revert to the market value, which would mean who would want to buy a trailer when you have to pay a huge amount of money to do it. Although, again, I haven't checked in at De Anza lately. And in fact, I would like an update from our informed behind-the-curtain source there. If he wants to step out and give us one of those, that would be good. But let's leave that for the moment, and let's hear a little bit more from the Saturday protest that we had last weekend. And again, we're going to be doing a sort of a, I don't know if we're going to call it a junior version or a sort of an interim version of this protest, a different kind of protest. Starting this Saturday, as I mentioned before, 10 a.m. at the post office. There'll be hot coffee, there'll be oatmeal, and a couple of other num-num goodies, and I will now, of course, answer the phone. And welcome to Free Radio Santa Cruz, whoever you are.
I can barely hear you.
How about now?
No.
How about now?
It's better.
Yeah, I've got a really makeshift situation, caller. I apologize. It should have been fixed last time, but...
I'll take your bait, Robert.
Sorry?
I'll take your bait and respond.
Ah, all right, mysterious caller. It's good to hear you. Can I identify you, or do you want to be anonymous?
You can identify me.
Well, this is Battling Bob LaMonica, as I've called him in the past. He's a man who's... Actually, you were active in trying to get rent control on the ballot 16 years ago.
Yes, I believe in rent control.
And what about De Anza, where you're still living? Are people are losing their, you know, they've lost their equity, but how does that impact the residents there?
Well, in 2004, we were forced, you either were going to sign it or you were going to get booted out, to sign a 34-year lease, which is something. I'm not saying it's not something, which takes us to 2037 for my wife and myself. And I don't want to cut down De Anza necessarily. It's a very beautiful place to live. But what was done with no recompense, and that's kind of a separate story. But we're here in Santa Cruz, and we have until 2037 very affordable rent. And our house, the house that we live in, the manufactured home, has been paid for a while, okay?
I visited it. It's a very nice place. But how does that impact others in, you know,
well,
in your park?
Well, there's no longer rent control, but you can get a 34-year lease. But the reality is the rents have been tripled and sometimes quadrupled and more. Okay. But you can negotiate to some degree. People do move in. It's kind of a trade-off between a condo, let's say a three-bedroom condo, and having your own pad. So, you know, that's kind of where it's at. If you can accept the fact that you're not going to have any equity out in the out end, other than what your house is valued at, it's a sincere trade-off even now. People do move in. Okay.
Okay. Fair enough.
Now, in regards to your guest, what's your guest name? I'm sorry.
Ivy.
Ivy. Ivy, are you there?
Hi. Hello.
Hi,
yes.
Ivy.
Hello.
Okay. I was a theater major in college many, many years ago. I could have gone to grad school. I could have taken a field work in Manhattan. I took the latter. I couldn't get my act together. This was in the 70s. So I got a job in a tool factory and saw an ad in a paper for an advertising agency and got into advertising and then got into radio advertising sales. And now I have, for many, many years now, I've had my own business off and on in technology, marketing, communications. If you're willing to leverage your bachelor's degrees into something, you can actually turn a buck that maybe you can stomach, okay? In Santa Cruz, in my opinion, you got to be willing to go over the hill. But there are opportunities. They're by and large in sales and in marketing. Because the degrees that you've got, they were very popular 30, 40 years ago. If you look at UC Santa Cruz now, the reason why it's gone so techie is that those are where the opportunities are. All right, when I got out of college in the 70s, there was an abundance of liberal arts, and you could be trained. So I want to call you on that and see what your response might be to that. Are you willing to go over the hill?
Am I willing to go over the hill to be able to afford to live in
San Francisco? No, to work.
Well,
are you willing to work in technology?
Well, I'm going to give you a more full picture of who I am. I'm a 52-year-old single mother who raised their children in homeless shelters.
Yeah, but, you know, what do you want to be said about that? I mean, I feel a certain degree of empathy for you. You have two degrees, right?
That's correct.
All right. Neither one of them are necessarily marketable.
Correct.
And let's be honest, the Bay Area is very expensive. San Francisco is incredibly expensive now because of the tech boom. And Santa Cruz is becoming tonier by the hour, right? Because people that can afford to live here, that can afford to move here, are people with stock job options and double incomes from over the hill that want to raise their kids in a on the west side, so they can afford to pay $850 for a molded out bungalow, right? And those are kind of the economic realities. And in terms of rent here, you're talking about now in Santa Cruz, $2,500 for a one bedroom. So it's quite outrageous. I mean, I agree with rent control, even with the legal stopgaps, which are that essentially vacancy control. But at least while you're living there, you can't be booted out, except under very extreme circumstances. All right. So rent control, I think, in a pocket like Santa Cruz makes sense. Although the city council with their task force, they won't dare mention rent control. Am I correct, Robert?
Well, they'll mention it to destroy it, as they did at De Anza. And
am I there?
Yes, you are. They'll mention it to destroy it, as they did at De Anza.
Yes. How unreasonable it is. But the fact is, somebody's going to work at a jack-in-the-box. Somebody's going to be a maid. I can't think of the woman's name that has the only current renters group in existence right now. She's actually a very nice person.
That was Donna Dice, I think, at one point.
No, there's another one after Donna, Robert.
Cynthia Berger?
Cynthia Berger, that's right.
Yeah.
I mean, the fact is, there are people that are maids. They're house cleaners. They work in fast food restaurants. And, you know, they should be accommodated in some way. And it shouldn't all be Section 8 and welfare, in my opinion. All right? And to some degree, we need to tone down the ravages of capitalism. And I think to some degree the Scandinavians, have a very good model for that. And I think in our time, Bernie Sanders at least is raising the issue being redistribution of wealth. Now, I say that at the same token where your guest, Ivy, you know, come on, Ivy, I mean, you're 52. It's going to be very difficult for you, if not impossible, to get to get some kind of income grounding. But look into things like Section 8 if you have not.
I've been on the housing wait list here for 6 years.
I understand it's brutal, okay? And I understand why you want to live in Santa Cruz. It's still a very hip town, okay? All right, but it is the coast. You know, and let's face it, it's becoming very expensive here.
Well,
unless you luck out, and I've been in the past very lucky with rent, okay? Extremely lucky.
Bob, let her respond to what you're saying. I think she's
yeah. Go ahead.
I really appreciate your commentary. I want to say that I'm not attached to living here, and I hope that you heard that I do have a parcel of land that I bought my children, 2.5 acres in New Mexico. And that's, you know, a very significant option for us when we receive this change of, lease agreement. I'm just kind of not sure what you're getting at. It feels like you're prying me a little bit, like I haven't worked hard enough or I haven't done enough to better myself, or I'm not sure what your line of questioning actually is.
Well, my line of questioning is what I asked Robert off the air was, what have you done to improve your income generation opportunity? And that's not an insincere question, by the way. I mean, there's a give and take reality. It's not necessarily, you know, capitalism, but it's just, if you're not born wealthy and if you're not on SSI, you're going to fend in some way and you're going to make trade-offs. There are people that work in the fields, and I'm not saying you should work in the fields, but somebody does that. Somebody does house cleaning work.
But Bob, you're focusing on her rather than on the system that is creating this huge profiteering bubble in Santa Cruz.
Not necessarily. I've tried to bring up it all. I've raised Bernie Sanders. I've raised Regis Bishop.
I know, but your initial, and I know you may favor all these things. But what are the implications for people in Santa Cruz? Are you going to get out there with your rent control petition again? Or are we going to start taking over houses?
I don't see myself doing a whole hell of a lot unless something really happens for a couple of years more till I retire. All right?
Bob?
A year and a half.
Bob?
All right? And then we'll see.
Bob,
it's sincere to raise the issue of income accountability.
Right.
So it is sincere. It's not. I'm not trying to be mean.
Okay, here, no. Okay, so Ivy has a point, or she has a question for you, I think.
Go ahead.
Well, it's not a question so much. It is just a comment that 3 years ago I became a volunteer visitor for hospice. And I was put through a 56-hour training with hospice so I could go into homes and be a support person to families who had a dying loved one in the home. And I really enjoyed that work very much. It was remarkable work, and I really loved the people that I was working for and working with. And so after the client I was working with passed away, I decided to go into in-home health care, companionship, and memory services for elderly. There's a need here in Santa Cruz. And even, you know, with the IHSS supplement, which is about $350 an hour, I was only making $11.50 an hour.
Yeah, it's scandalous. I won't deny that.
So,
by the way, I have
mean,
a
you're,
friend.
You're putting the question to me: what are you doing to make yourself better? The other question is: what is the economy doing to help raise people to a level where they can meet their basic needs?
And for me, the question is what are we doing to essentially, you know, overturn a system that is creating an impossible situation for an increasingly larger number of people? And if you think Bernie Sanders is going to do it, I wish you luck with that.
No, he's going to at least raise the issue, Robert.
Yeah,
that's
well,
more than anybody else has done in quite a while.
No, I mean, Bernie Sanders has some positions, you know, that are certainly better than that of many of the other Democratic hacks that he will eventually support once he doesn't get
the
nomination.
Well, I won't disagree with you. He's a party hack.
Yeah.
But he wasn't independent, but he went at least to raise the issues. He's become a party hack.
Well, what I want to do now, Bob, is, I mean, I'll give you sum up in a minute or two because I got to move on to something else.
All right. Let me just say, I have a friend of mine that went back to school to learn nursing in his 40s, and he works in palliative care here in Santa Cruz. Very nice guy. In fact, I won't drop his name, but I think a lot of people know who he is.
Mm-hmm.
Been around for a long time. In fact, helped me out in the 90s. It's possible. The income disparity, the problem with living in Santa Cruz is not going to go away anytime soon. But I think your guest, if you look back at your life, you know, there are choices that were made that kind of locked you out.
Yeah, I think that the choices that were made by others locked a lot of people out.
No, she took two humanities degrees, Robert.
Yeah, no, I'm aware of that. I'm aware of that, and I don't.
Was that a crime now to take 2 degrees in humanities?
Well, it's a crime if you're going to use that as a method to generate income. And you're going to blame the system because they won't hire you with your humanities degree.
I'm not blaming
you. As I asked you early on, are you willing to get into marketing?
I'm the one who's
sales.
Blaming. Bob, I'm the one who's blaming the system. She's quite mellow about the situation, and she's not blaming anybody. But, you know, I'm the one who's raising my hackles against this.
Are you willing to get into sales? Or is it evil to get into sales?
You know, I just find your line of questioning really hurtful and offensive at this point. I've raised two really marvelous children for 20 years all on my own. My daughter works for California State Parks. She's going to be a ranger. She's going to take care and be a steward of the natural resources we have here. My son is working for Santa Cruz Parks and Recreation. He is digging the trails for you so you can walk on them at Harvey West and Pogonip.
And ticketing the homeless when he has to.
You know, so your line of questioning is just becoming very, upsetting for me. I don't know what else to say about that.
Well, I'll just drop one word on you. And it's a very harsh word, but forgive me, accountability. And life
I'm
is not fair.
I'm very accountable. Thank you very much.
Life is not fair. Thank you.
Thank you, Bob, for calling in, and thank you, Ivy, for dealing with... Aha! Another caller, perhaps an even harsher critic.
Steal
yourself.
Bring it on.
Hey there, you're on Free Radio with Ivy and Robert.
Oh, I'm not sure I can get a word in edgewise here, but... My comment to both of your other guests is that until the American economic situation is changed so that every American has the right to a job, and it is the business of corporations to hire people, not make money, that we're going to continue to have these problems where educated persons, such as the woman you have in the studio, can get a job in a field that she wants. It's not a matter of whether she has an education. It's she has a right to a job, because if you can't exist in this situation in this country without a job, we have to create those jobs, and the way to create those jobs is to change the focus of business to create jobs, not to make money. And we have to write that into corporate charters. We have to structure our income tax and incentive and financial incentive programs to require hiring rather than the production of capital.
So, caller, you've been living in Santa Cruz for decades, yes?
Yes.
And you've seen how things are going with rents and jobs.
Well, honestly, Robert, when I retire, I'm going to have to move out of Santa Cruz because my retirement income will not support the paying rent or buying a property here.
And would you say this is common among the circle of friends you run in and people you know?
Well, I have friends who run in all different socioeconomic circles, Robert, yourself included.
Mm-hmm.
You obviously can afford to live in Santa Cruz, but your guest cannot. And people who work in the service industries in Santa Cruz either have to double or triple up on housing, and it's just ridiculous. Until we have a living wage, and California's living wage doesn't even California's current minimum wage is about 40% below the federal poverty wage. So it's part of the problem is wages, part of the problem is rents, part of the problem is that most of the money is being made by a minority of people in the United States, and there's very little left for the rest of us. So,
but shouldn't we scuttle after them to try to get the jobs that they will pay us for?
No, we should require them to create the jobs with the profits they make. In other words, if they make $1 million, they need to hire at least 15 people with that $1 million profit.
And how do you see these corporate giants being persuaded to do this?
Through tax policy. That's the only hammer we have for them.
Not much of a direct action revolutionary type, I take it, caller.
Well, these are ideas that are not popular. They're certainly not politically feasible at the present time. But these are ideas that are being pursued in Scandinavian countries where, you know, the ratio between the lowest paid worker and the highest paid worker in a company is something on the order of 5 or 6 times, whereas the average difference between the average worker in the United States and corporate executives is 30 to 100 times more money. You know, these income ratios are ridiculous, and they're getting more ridiculous every day. And there's really only one way to put a stop to it, and that's by taxing these people on their excessive incomes. I mean, you know, that it's not entirely true that profit is theft, but excess profit certainly is.
Well, thank you, caller, and I'm going to, of course, expose you to all those who already know. You're going to be coming into the studio to do a different kind of show at 8 o'clock.
Certainly, and we won't talk anything about income or taxation or socialist tendencies in the world.
But there will be perhaps an Earth First update in your show, From the Cream to the Dregs.
Yes.
As there was not last week, I'm afraid.
No, there were technical difficulties last week, but I'm working around those technical difficulties, and I will be presenting the Earth First update this week. However, that's the last Earth First update for a few. Done live in the studio for a few weeks. It will be available on the internet. And I'm not sure if anybody, including yourself, will set up my shows on Friday, but if you don't, then they won't be on. But they will be available on the internet, and I'll announce all that during my show.
Yeah, that's something. I've revealed your name to our guest. She has a comment or a question.
Dennis, thank you for calling in, and thank you for your commentary. I appreciate that. And I think other listeners would also appreciate that.
Well, I have a degree from UCSC. Actually, I have 2 degrees from UCSC. Both of them are in science. And I have made money from neither of them over my career. After I graduated from college, I was offered a position in a government agency for $4 a day, room and board, and a uniform. Some summertime temporary position. I went back into the electronics industry where I made a fairly good living over the hill and in the Silicon Valley.
So you did what our previous caller, Bob, suggested. You became accountable, and you turned away from your phantasmal notions of using your degrees for a job you might actually enjoy, and you joined the system.
Well, I was part of the system before I went to college, and when I entered college, I had every intention of using my degrees to work in a field which I was training to be in. However, during the period of time when I was in school, that department of the federal government was essentially, dismantled, you could say. And the position for which I trained was no longer really available. So, you know, those are the kind of things that can happen. It wasn't my fault. It was James Watt's fault, and Ronald Reagan. But, I dealt with it. I had a family to feed and house, and, I got up at 5 in the morning and drove to Fremont and worked my butt off all day. And then I got retired, not of my own volition, but that's my own personal story. Everyone else's story is different. But if you had a right to a job, and I believe people do, and I believe that if business can't supply those jobs, then it's the business of government to create those jobs. That's not an unusual position. It was the law in the United States in 1933 that, corporations were supposed to make jobs, and they didn't do it, and so the government hired people. So, it's been done before. It could be done again. Anyway, I should shut up and let you get back to your show.
Well, I appreciate the the background, Dennis. I think a lot of people who didn't know the background, you know, not necessarily as relevant as this, your musical expertise still gives us, you know, it fleshes out the picture of the human being. So thank you.
Thank you for calling.
All right. Well, to your guest, Robert, I wish you all the best. I'm not sure there's any better economic opportunities in New Mexico. So, anyway.
I would agree with that.
Thanks. And that really is the point. And it looks like you're getting a flood of calls. I'm going to have to keep you on as I could pay you a very low wage to stay in the studio. Let's see who's on the. Hi, you're on the air again. Welcome to Free Radio, wherever you may be, with Ivy and Robert.
Is this the Freedom Sleepers hotline?
Well, actually, you probably haven't been listening to the show, Mr. Caller, have you?
No, I haven't been listening. I've been otherwise engaged. A very busy business, you know.
I understand. Well, yes, this is actually the... we slumber and we walk at the same time. We hope we'll be allowed to slumber when we're lying down. Hotline, yes. And actually, I've been talking about and playing some audio from last Saturday's rally and looking forward to this Saturday's rally at 10 o'clock at the post office, where there will be reportedly oatmeal and other liquid, warm, comforting things for people to sip and eat.
Hey, now, is that being provided by Cafe Huff?
I believe Cafe Huff and a certain gumbo jumbo Joe Schultz is also going to be involved.
Oh, my. There you go.
Now, you are, of course, a silver-haired Steve Plaich, the well-known silver-tongued orator who sleeps one night and then goes home at the four-day protest. Isn't that aren't you the same guy? Just like the rest of us, I might add.
We're building a movement.
Building a movement by moving away.
One night at a time.
You know, that's really been an issue that I'm going to be. We're all planning to meet tomorrow to talk about this in an exclusive, you know, hideaway to plot what we're going to do tomorrow or the day after and a week. I guess you spoke about a possible camp out Saturday after this coming Saturday, yes?
Yeah, well, that's July 18th. That's what I'm hoping that we can consensus on and get ready to go.
And and you're also, of course, you're actively putting your fingers in the pie of various other groups that are doing far less than I would want them to do. And even you seem to be getting more critical these days of establishment groups that have lots of boards of directors meetings and have little fundraising activities and show movies and have forums. But while do Black Lives Matter, do Homeless Lives Matter, well, you wouldn't know it from watching the raising rents and the increasing number of citations and the way the police are acting. That's the way I'm looking at it. So.
Well, I can't disagree with that. You know, I'm becoming inclined to agree with those folks who would like to get out and get in the street and do things and try to change the system and change people's minds that way. The kind of continuous meetings and fundraising and talking issues to death has not seemed to be very effective, and so I'm changing kind of the model of my activism to be more activist, basically.
You old cynic, you.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's what happens when you see the things you do are not kind of affecting the kind of change you would like. You have to, you know, you have to revise your approach. It just is the only sensible thing to do.
Well, any reports on stuff coming up in the next week or things you've seen in the last week? Because you do
get
around.
They had a terrific memorial for Charlie Phillips over at Calvary Episcopal today. Church was filled with folks. You know, you would have known 95% of them, you know, the local, you know, activists and concerned citizens. People have been around for a while. It was a terrific memorial. Father Joel delivered the eulogy, usually entertaining and moving. They had a great buffet afterwards. So it was that John Malkin read at the service. So it was terrific, really.
And, of course, you used that opportunity to mobilize those people to join the sleep out on July, what is it?
Well, no, I didn't use that opportunity. We had our AFC meeting this evening, and both Rabbi Phil and myself were there urging the AFC and the faith community to join us on July 18th. And give them kind of a report about what had happened on the 4th and kind of just engaging their interest and actually participating in something that may help at some point change the minds of the city council on the sleeping ban, and may even create some safe sleeping space for folks, which, as you know, are two of the main goals of whatever we're going to be calling ourselves, be it the Freedom Sleepers or anything else of like that. But that's really our goal and mission, I think, right now.
Certainly not homeless lives matter, I would hope.
Well, no, and, initially was resistant to changing that. I did get an opportunity. We did have one of the SCORE meetings yesterday, and I got an opportunity to talk to your friend of mine, Sid Bicignata.
For those who don't know, Steve, tell us what SCORE is.
SCORE is the Santa Cruz County Community Coalition to Overcome Racism. They're really, with the NAACP, the two primary agencies that address institutionalized racism, as best as they can in Santa Cruz County. But Simba and I serve on the steering committee of the board for that. And I asked him before the meeting, I said, we have this group and we've been, planning and doing these actions, and we had initially called ourselves Homeless Lives Matter. Do you think that exploits the Black Lives, Brown Lives Matter? And he said that he thought that it did. So, I'm inclined to defer to somebody who is being, who has fought for African American rights in Santa Cruz for a long period of time without much success. If he feels like that it is exploitive of the Black Lives Matter movement, then I would certainly be inclined to change our name to something else.
So he naturally agreed he would jump on board in favor of, let's say, the small but real colored minority who are homeless in Santa Cruz, and he would be interested in perhaps solidarity actions with them, as the rest of us have been, or perhaps not.
I think Simba would, but like a lot of activists in town, he's trying to resurrect the NAACP. He's really trying to get SCORE moving in some positive direction. His time and energy is limited. You and I both know Simba and know that his heart's in the right place, but he does have physical limitations and he has time limitations. And so, he's going to do what he's going to do, but we who are really primarily engaged in advocating for the human rights of people experiencing homelessness are just going to have to carry the water on this. And it's nice to have support, but we have to get out and do actions and raise consciousness and change minds, and that's what we have to do. If others want to join into that, they're perfectly welcome, be it SCORE or Simba or the AFC or anybody.
But none of those groups.
But
none of those.
You and I have to do that.
Have any of those groups come on to support this, even symbolically?
I think the AFC. The AFC certainly is sympathetic.
Did they pass a resolution? Did they pass a resolution stating
that
makes a lot of difference?
They're not much in the way of resolutions. I think that by consensus they support the concept of getting out and trying to create safe sleeping spaces for people experiencing homelessness, because that's what they do, as you know, on a very limited scale with the faith community shelters.
Can they be put on a flyer that says that they are one of the support groups for this? And ditto with the NAACP?
I think that's
and SCORE?
That I
no, I didn't think so.
That Phil and I asked them this evening, but I do think it's something that they would certainly consider. I don't see any reason why they wouldn't, frankly.
Well, they obviously haven't, or they would have so far.
Yeah. Yeah,
and you've been there. You're a primary figure, or certainly.
Well, this was our first meeting. We have meetings monthly, so it's not like I'm in contact with the whole group every day.
Mm. Well, what else is happening, Steve, other than these depressing events?
We're meeting tomorrow in our group, trying to plan our next actions. I think we continue to do actions, and my view, particularly the sleep outs, although it's regrettable that it was only one net out of four, I think if we continue to do them and continue to generate citations, at some point it sets up our legal strategy in terms of resurrecting the lawsuit against the stay-away ordinance, because if we get enough citations, eventually some of us are going to get stay-away orders. It's inevitable.
Mm-hmm.
When those folks, like if I start getting citations, you get further citations, which you've already stood up and got one, or Phil Posner, or Louise Posner, any of the people who are going to be repeatedly cited, those people can then in turn be the plaintiffs for the lawsuit, which we can bring back. And I think that's an important aspect of the legal strategy of what we're doing. So it's important to continue to have the camp out. And I'm all in favor of having those as often as we can.
Well, we always do that tonight, Steve, if you want to go sleep out. I understand, you are sometime residence challenged yourself.
I am, but... we do need some critical mass, as you know, so we can get some publicity. We can get raise people's consciousness about the importance.
Well, wait a minute. A minute ago, you were talking about tickets. Now you're talking about critical mass. I agree that they're both issues. Anyway,
yeah.
I mean, I'm
one's not mutually exclusive of the other.
Right. Now, you know, I mean, this, I am pointing out what I think is a fundamental hypocrisy in this position, but I share it, so I can't really, you know, get away from it. But it is still something I think that we are both suffering from. We can get enough tickets in 3 days to, you know, start challenging the stay-away orders if we want. We just have to be willing to suffer them. And we don't want to do that. Instead, we want to move to our committee meetings. We want to go to my radio show. I want to be able to go home and be in my bed. I've got a very busy schedule. All this crap, which is true, I'm sure, but also shows what the priorities are and the differences are between what we're saying that we want to do and what really perhaps for some group of people needs to happen. It may not be us, you know, I don't know. And I'm, you know, I'll be there tomorrow, you know, with you, watching everybody rail about what the name of the group should be, what the process should be, and, you know, spending very little time about whether they're going to show up that night and get a ticket, or show, or go down to the staff and demand the reports that Micah Posner, the council member, refuses to get for us. You know, in other words, it's really hard, I think you probably have seen, and I'm always railing about it, to get substance out of groups that are primarily concerned with structure and form and are really tied to a middle-class lifestyle.
I can't argue with that. Yeah, I can't argue with what you say. I'm saying that the model of the activism has to change. You know, if you and I and a group of people, you know, commit to going and sleeping out and getting these tickets, so whenever that happens to be, and then by virtue of that, maybe being able to challenge, you know, the stay-away orders and ordinances to be able to get some movement on the camping bans to create safe sleeping spaces, then that's what we should be doing. And as you point out, you can't do that by having committee meetings or pleading with people to do the right thing or having them make sponsorship commitments or doing, you know, anything like that. You have to be out doing it. And so, you know, I don't disagree with what you said.
So what else is happening, Steve, that you think would be useful for people listening to this broadcast to know?
Let's see. Well, of course, Food Not Bombs is going to be Saturday and Sunday as usual. There's the Peace Vigil tomorrow night from 5 to 6, Cooper and Pacific. Sunday night, we're going to be doing a retrospective and kind of a testimony to Tony Phillips' tribute to him on Voice from the Village. I did mention to Sandino today, who I saw at the memorial, about the Freedom Sleepers and about sleeping out. He said that he thought that would be an excellent subject for a show on the Voice from the Village. So that's something to keep in mind that we may want to go. And again, that's just sitting and talking about the issue.
Yep.
But it's also an opportunity to let people know that there are other people who are actually doing things.
Of course, we could always occupy the studio.
Lead by example,
Well, so I thank you for
calling. And then, Tuesday, this should thrill you. They're having a meeting of a new group of people who are trying to align with Homeless Services Center and the faith community to have a faith solution to homelessness, and that will be at Twin Lakes Church at 3 o'clock on Tuesday. So I'm sure you want to attend that and give them the full benefit of your observations and wisdom on the subject.
What church is this, and what's the nature of the meeting?
It's a group that's formed around the response to the reduction in homeless services. It's basically a larger faith community response. I've already had one meeting. I think it was a couple weeks ago. And it's some of the larger churches, Twin Lakes, St. John's Episcopal, Anaptos, Resurrection, Anaptos, those kind of larger congregations. But it's open to the public. So you can come and put your 2 cents worth in. The Homeless Services Center is looking for commitment from the faith community in terms of volunteers, funding, long-term commitment. So
guards to guard the fences and perhaps to check people's IDs as they come in, that sort of thing?
I don't have any idea. That's probably not going to be the substance of the discussion. but certainly at a public meeting. So, you know,
have you been able to secure, I've been asking you this for about a month and a half, the budget of the Homeless Lack of Services Center or the previous year's budget? I mean, it's a public document, I think.
And that's one of the things that we talked about tonight in the AFC meeting, was that if we're going to make any kind of a commitment to partnership with HSC, we need to see their budget. They need to provide us all of their financial documentation. So, you know,
I mean,
maybe we'll be able to get it through that avenue. I don't know.
Well, I mean, you know, I've been told, and I think since county and city funding goes into it, I believe it. You know, it is available through those two sources, through Public Records Act. I have not requested it, mainly because I'm interested in making sure that people who are responsible take action I essentially want to expose the fact that they're not taking action, and that's really more relevant to me. But, you know, I think we can get the budget. The problem with the Homeless Lack of Services Center is it provides less and less services, and it wants more and more money and support from the community. I mean, it's willing to do these limited programs with people that are inside its programs that are fundamentally, you know, this... What, you have to have a path to housing now to be in Paul Lee? Is that what you've heard?
Well, you're going to have some registration requirement. There's going to be much more screening in depth when you're in Paul Lee. Then you'll get the services that are going to be provided as supportive services to Paul Lee, but nobody else is getting them.
Right, so the meals are cut back. No meals, no laundry, no showers,
no
bathroom
meal.
Accessibility. Yeah. Why would people pay to have services cut back to the majority of homeless people? It is, to me, a kind of an obscenity that people are even going
to
be considering this.
You would have to ask the Board of Supervisors then why they decided to give $200,000 to the Homeless Service Center for that purpose.
Oh, I don't have to ask
them.
They're
the ones who can answer that question.
Well, I'm wondering why you and others are running around pimping for them at the AFC and the other groups. I mean, I don't know if you are or not.
I'm not. They simply raised. I spoke against that. Yeah, I am not in support, frankly, of our participation with Homeless Services Center unless there's complete transparency, unless we see all of their records, unless we can find out why they do what they do and what it's costing them.
Well,
that is certainly my position.
Well, that's a good position, but that's not the position I'm concerned about, although, I mean, I'm concerned about that. What about the position that they restore and expand real services to the majority of people that they claim to be concerned about serving? If they're going to have specialized little programs that are simply government grant, magnets.
And you're asking me for an answer to that?
Well, no, I'm saying, is that...
Steve, when I asked you
that question, you said you wanted to see them transparent and accountable, and I said no. But more important than that is that they be accessible. And I didn't hear you use that word, and that's why yes, I'm asking you if that's what you want to see.
I don't have any idea what that's going to look like in terms of accessibility. That's just a word.
Question. No, just even restoring the services that previously existed but open to anybody who is homeless.
I'm in favor of. How am I going to personally restore those services?
Are you going to advocate for it, or are you going to say, I just want them transparent and accountable?
Well, I'm always going to advocate for that.
Well, you didn't mention it before.
I'm going to explain to you. You want chapter and verse of a 60-minute discussion about this that we had? Conversation?
Your rhetoric is commendable, but I think you catch my drift.
Well, you're the one that started with the rhetorical question. It's not me.
No, it's a substantive question because you're a man who goes to these meetings. Anyway, I always like to, you know, nail you to the cross whenever I can, Steve. But
there you go. There's a nice image. I'll bring that back to the AFC.
You might be able to move their hearts and they'd be open up the lawns so people could actually use the lawns of the Father Joel's church the rest of the week instead of having to only use it, 2 hours a week. Thank you very much, Joel.
Now, you're completely wrong because they're sleeping a half a dozen or more people over there every single night. I saw them there this morning when we went over to get ready to go to Second Harvest.
That's not what I'm talking
about. Check that out, Robert. Before you make statements
Steve, you misunderstand me. I'm not saying that people in the programs, whether they're in the programs of the Homeless Lack of Services Center or Joel Miller's program, The very few that are in that program get to do it. I'm talking about the broader homeless community that they will arrest for or drive away from that area if they either sleep there or even sit down on the grass during the day.
I mean, they're sleeping there overnight. You know, get off your dead butt in the morning, go over there at 6:30 and see how many people are sleeping around those grounds, because there are many people sleeping on those grounds.
And they're getting tickets, too.
Every single night.
And they're getting tickets.
Do that, and then you can report back to me.
Steve, I go there as frequently as you do, and I actually interview these people.
You're there. How often are you there at 6:30 in the morning?
And I talk to people who were there at 6:30 in the morning, and they talk to me about the tickets they got at 6:30 in the morning.
Nobody got a single ticket. There was no first alarm folks around. There wasn't any people.
And that is also true.
I was there tonight, Robert, and there were people bedding down.
And that's good.
You were there tonight. Time.
And that's
so
good. And that's
really
good.
Do an investigative reporting. Don't be talking
and
about things you don't know anything about.
I am talking about the general policies of Joel Miller
general
regarding. Wait
horseshit.
A minute,
you're
interrupting me, Steve.
Now you're generalizing.
No, I'm actually stating the truth.
And then when you don't get them, you generalize. Go down there and take a look at that.
Hey, I'm not denying the reality that you're talking about. And Ivy wants to butt in on
you
both of us. Wait, Steve,
gentlemen.
Ivy wants to say something. Go ahead.
Gentlemen, you're both doing a good job representing your ideas.
We're talking over each other.
And you're talking over each other, and you're getting very heated.
We do that a lot. You still there, Steve?
Anyway, hey, go check it out before you start making generalizations about it. I got to go anyway. Nice, Ivy. Take care. Robert, talk to you tomorrow.
Thank
All right.
You. God bless
take care,
you.
Steve. And, of course, since I'm on the radio, I do get the last word. And I'm very glad to hear from Steve that that last night and tonight, those who slept there didn't get tickets. And that often happens for those who do. But it also is not by no means a safe sleeping spot. And Joel Miller has declared that there's no necessarily safe sleeping area there. But more important than that, during the daytime, throughout the day, it is people are not welcome to sit on the lawn. People are not welcome to linger there if they look homeless. That has been the case for quite a period of time. And if that's changed, I would love to hear that. But I couldn't quite get Steve to hear what I was saying there, so I couldn't really get confirmation or denial on that point. But if anybody knows if there's been a change in the policy, and I know that maybe it's simply Joel Miller's policy when he serves a meal on Mondays that now he doesn't let people sit on the lawn, now he's forcing people to get little tickets when they come into his building. And don't get me wrong, Joel is not only a nice guy, he is a very tolerant guy in many ways. But this is a huge piece of green property in the middle of town with one of the largest parking areas, and it is not, as far as I know, open to people who are poor to use the property in a natural way. And that is because of pressure both, I would imagine, from his board of directors and from right-wing property owners like council member and former mayor Cynthia Matthews, who owns property across the street. And I don't think that's an error, but if it is, I'm open to correction. Ivy, you had a thought? Or are you just enjoying the rhetoric, bouncing back and forth?
Yes, the very passionate rhetoric.
Yes, well it's, it goes with the situation. I don't know if we have much more time. I'm going to play a little more from the Saturday protest, perhaps to encourage all you folks out there who have a possible interest in this to come on down this Saturday and join us. Have some coffee, have some breakfast with us, and also maybe hoist a sign and walk with us for a while, or join us at our destination, which is going to be somewhere near the wharf. I think it's the roundabout we're talking about, or somewhere closer to the wharf. I'm not sure if the actual specific destination has been chosen, but it's an attempt to make the community aware that sleeping in Santa Cruz after 11 o'clock at night is a crime. Not to mention high rents being a perpetual crime 24 hours a day for those who can even afford to get into the rental properties. But, Ivy, is there more you want to say? Because we only have about 9 minutes left in the show, and I want you to be able to comment before we get ousted by Uncle Dennis.
Well, just thank you very much for inviting me to the show. And I don't think I came off as a crybaby or that I have any sad story to tell. I think a lot of people in Santa Cruz are faced with the situation that I'm faced with right now, and I hope to meet it with a reasonable mind and just do the best I can in the situation for myself and my family and just hope for the best.
Yabor. Thank you, Ivy. And let's hear a little more from last Saturday.
Can you hear me?
You're on free radio. What's up to, caller?
No, I couldn't get through. I couldn't get on to the station, so I was wondering if it was playing tonight, you know?
Oh, yeah,
so
you're on the air right now, caller. So.
All right, well, I can't reach it. I'm not sure why. Call back if I do, okay?
Well, let me ask you, caller, you're living in the River Street shelter, yes?
Right, right.
Have you been able to determine how easy it is for a person to get on the waiting list there, or is that another one of those eternal things we'll never find out except next week, which never comes?
I haven't determined that. I do see somebody I know here today trying to sign on. There's a procedure. You have to either come here twice a week. I think it's Tuesday and Thursday. You either have to call in every week, Tuesday and Thursday, or come in personally after 3. That's a procedure.
Okay, well, that's nice. The question, though, is are there criteria for getting on the list to begin with? That's my issue. Can you just walk in and sign up?
Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, I did inquire the other night when to see if there was emergency, if they operate emergency beds, and they do not operate emergency beds. The only way you can get in here is you have to be referred from the HPHP medical clinic, or you've got to come from the hospital. Be referred here from the hospital. They're the only two ways you can get in.
And that's for all the beds, or just the few emergency beds?
No, that's for all the beds. There is no few emergency beds. They're probably full right now.
So you can't get on the waiting list of the River Street Shelter. That's what you're telling me, except
yes.
If you come directly from the hospital or you're referred by the Homeless Persons Health Project.
Well, that's what I was told by the office. But on the other hand, the other way is you have to keep calling back here every twice a week.
Now, well, see, that's if you're on the list, you can find out if there's actually a bed available. I'm asking how to get on the list in the first place. You understand?
Yes. Well, I could just tell you they're the two ways that I know about.
We'll talk more about it later. I think there's a misunderstanding here, but it's important, and I'm going to explain to the audience why, but I've only got 5 minutes left, so I'm going to leave you unless you have something more you want to say.
No, I just don't know why my computers can't connect with your show. I tried quite a few number of times, you know?
Well, maybe it's because you haven't kicked down the $50 fee that I would have been requesting of you. Which...
Okay, maybe. But maybe. Anyway. Okay, Robert, I'll let you go with the show.
Thank you.
Talk to you later, okay?
So the reason it's important to be able to get on the River Street Shelter's waiting list is because if you are on the waiting list and you get a ticket for sleeping, the ticket will supposedly, according to the law, automatically be dismissed. That's also used to be the case with the Paul Lee Loft, which is currently closed but supposedly is scheduled to open again, for allowing 46 people who have a, quote, I guess it's a path to housing or something. Again, Steve Plaich didn't seem to know the details. And I tend to pull Steve's chain a lot about this because he has a little card that says Homeless Persons Legal Project. And therefore, I hold him more accountable for this stuff because he holds himself more accountable. And Steve tries to do many things. And at the same time, it seems to me, he also tries to maintain the facade of doing many things. And that can be a situation which lends him open to criticism from people like me. And perhaps I'll get some criticism for that comment. You are on free radio with me and with Ivy for the last 3 minutes. Hello.
I wanted to thank Ivy for being on, even though she's not accountable.
She's a no account.
She's not accountable.
Clearly.
Actually, that was an interesting call. It sort of illustrates the blame people will lay upon people for not being... for the system, and they like to sort of compartmentalize it and throw it on individuals. But I thought her voice was real important tonight to have on because it offers a realistic perspective of what a lot of women, whether they're single parents or even within, you know, traditional or non-traditional family structure, are dealing with in Santa Cruz and on the coastal areas of California. So. It was really valuable to hear, and I think she came off as having a lot of dignity and grace, and I think it's important for us to hear those voices as well.
Well, thank you, caller. Do you want to reveal your identity or not?
No, I don't really think that's not, for me, that's not important. I just wanted to honor her in terms of, I think she came across as wonderful. She's personable and offered a glimpse into the choices that a lot of us women have to make in terms of keeping our sanity and growing our families and trying to stay, you know, stable in a system that's increasingly not supportive.
Thank you so much, caller. That's a beautiful ending to our time together tonight. I really appreciate that. Thank you.
Okay, great. You take care.
You too.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And Uncle Dennis is in the studio. This is my setup, Uncle Dennis. It's a pretty pathetic situation. Anyway, I want to thank you for being with me on this edition of Bathroom Spears Broadside.
You're more than usually pathetic tonight, Robert.
And I will attempt to address the new person who's leaving me sputtering and speechless. I'll be available on Saturday at the with a cup of coffee in my hand, maybe some oatmeal. You can join me at 10 o'clock in front of the main post office, or Sunday at 9:30 in the studio here. You can listen, and maybe you can even be my guest. So give me a call. Off air, 423-4.